Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on adult Bible stories when we come back. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. It says, "By what way is it that the light is parted?" Or paraphrased, it says, "By what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated?" Now, can you imagine asking a question like that 4,000 years ago? You know, today it's a simple question to ask and answer. And the student answers, well, by passing it through the prism of the spectroscope. But who could have known that 4,000 years ago in Job's day? And when we heat a metal red hot or heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on a graph according to the content and of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some place out in space, we need only to pass that light ray through the spectroscope to see the composition of the star and the proportion of each of its ingredients. Now, this division of light rays is always constant, and it doesn't vary in the least particular, so that we may always rely upon the results. Well, spectroscopic analysis is an exact science. And this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. And you know, this places us in a quandary, because either Job knew that, or this is supernatural wisdom being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Scripture. And it's one more of the many lessons that we teach here at the Mosaic, here at the Law School. It's our Mosaic Law School here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, informative, entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, archives, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Well, this time let me change gears and let me tell you a couple of stories, a couple of Bible stories that occur out here in the real world that we live in. Every once in a while, there's an opportunity to use the Bible or to rely upon it, you know, for some portion of our life, liberties, and properties. I was in a trial one time, and there was a lawyer by the name of Tim Gammon. He was representing the insurance company, and I'd sued a county and a police department and a sheriff and some deputies. And while we were in this litigation, this is a civil rights litigation now, I was on the witness stand testifying, and Gammon, on cross-examination, asked me a series of questions. In the series of questions, he asked me about my daily practices, and then he said, "Now, is it true, Mr. Gordon, that you have a law school?" And I said, "Yeah, it is." And then he went on and he said, "Now, do you have students and do you teach here and what do you teach?" And it came up that one of those classes was the scriptural law. And then he said, "Now, do you practice this scriptural law?" And I said, I do. And then he said, can you describe that? And I said, well, there are 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments given to us in the Scripture from Mount Sinai by our Creator. And then he said, now, do you practice all of that law? And I said, yeah, yeah, I do. And then he said, are you practicing all of that law here in the courtroom today? And I said, yes, yes, as far as I know I am. And he said, now, there's a law here in the Bible in Deuteronomy 22, verse 12. Are you familiar with that law? And I said, no, I can't recall that off the top of my head. Maybe you could refresh my recollection. Now, he was prepared for this. He went over and he picked up his Bible, or a Bible. I don't know if it was his or not, per se, but he picked up a Bible. And he brought it over to me on the witness stand, and he said, would you read that scripture right there? And I did. Deuteronomy 22:12. In fact, I've got it open, so I'm just going to read it to you. And listen to what this says. In verse 11, it starts off and says, you shall not wear a garment of diverse sorts, as of woolen and linen together. And you shall make you fringes upon the four quarters of your vesture, wherewith you cover yourself. That fringe is also referred to, when you look up the word fringe, as a tassel. A tassel. Women wear tassels, and the old buckskin tassels that were on buckskin coats, you know, and clothes. Jerry Spence wears tassels on his clothes. If you've ever seen lawyer Jerry Spence standing in front of the Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C., he goes every once in a while. He's the only guy that I know of that goes in the court and doesn't wear the standard issue dress. You know, you're supposed to be wearing a suit and wingtip shoes and a tie. He doesn't. He goes in there wearing that buckskin coat and his tassels. Now, I don't know if he practices the Ten Commandment law. I wouldn't say that he doesn't. I couldn't say that he does. But he practices this law. You got to give it to Jerry Spence. He's actually practicing Deuteronomy 22:12. And so here's this lawyer. Now you can imagine how this courtroom is arrayed. There's a jury and a judge in here. This is Federal District Court, and this Judge Clark is who it was. And this is what we call a ringer question. Ringer. The objective here is to show that I'm a lion sack of you-know-what. And a hypocrite, and he's going to expose me for the manifest fraud that I am. Now, you've probably heard me tell you a time or two that I'm a pathological liar, so I've never laid claim to anybody that I'm righteous or holy or that I tell the truth. And I told you about Professor Swift's test back in 1918, and how everybody lies 25% of the time and so on. So anyway, his job is to show that the police, the deputies, and the county officials, they all tell the truth 110% of the time. And people that file civil rights actions against these people for police abuse and police misconduct, they're liars, cheats, and they're hypocrites and so on. And so there I was, sitting on the witness stand, and I just read this, and then here comes the ringer question. He said, well, Mr. Gordon, are you practicing that law here in this courtroom today? And old Judge Clark, you know, he is a Mason. He leans forward on the bench, looks over at me, and he's got this kind of half grin on his face, you know, like, gotcha. Now, the jury, got to remember that down, I live in the Bible Belt, this is the South, and down here in the South, all these people go to church, you know, every Sunday. Hell, they go to church every Wednesday and Sunday down here. So, and all these religious people sitting on the jury, they all look over at me like, yeah, you loudmouth hypocrite. So there it was. Now, listen. You know, verse 11 says here, you shall not wear a garment of diverse sorts, such as woolen and linen together. Boy, I had them on that one. And because I was wearing an all-wool suit, I had all cotton underwear on. You know, I had cotton socks. I mean, I was sure in compliance with verse 11. So, now, I stood up. Now, see, I'm on the witness stand, and I want to make sure everybody can see. So I stood up, and I unbuttoned my coat. And under my coat, I wear a scarf. It's a white scarf with tassels on the end. I've got a black one with black tassels on the end. And then I've got blue tassels here. See, the scripture calls for blue tassels. Then I've got blue tassels, and I put those blue tassels, you know, on my buttons. Now, I don't put it on the outside. Jerry Spence has his on the outside where everybody can see it. I wear mine on the inside where nobody knows that I'm wearing my tassels. But I've got them on. Now, remember, there are 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. They're divided into 133 subject matters of law. One of those subject matters deals with clothing. And under the clothing statute, there's four or five statutes. And this is one of the statutes pursuant to that law. Now, Jesus, remember, well, you know, the Messiah, the Anointed One, you know, whatever name we're going to apply to him. And for most of you people out there, I got to apply Jesus. But since we got rid of the Christians, they're not listening here today, I guess we better call him the Messiah. He was wearing these tassels one day. The reason I know he was wearing these tassels, there was a lady, and then she had an issue of blood. Now today, if somebody had an issue of blood, we'd say, well, that woman's got leukemia. And she'd been to the doctors, and she probably had Blue Cross, Blue Shield. She went to the doctors until it all ran out. She didn't have any more money, and all of a sudden she couldn't get medical care anymore, so she's feeling poorly, and so here's the Messiah. He's walking down the road, and he's got a bunch of people around him, or he's talking to some people, and there's a big press of people around him. And all of a sudden, he says, who touched me? And Peter was standing right there next to him, and he said, what? You've got 100 people pressing around you over here, and you're asking, who touched you? I mean, there's 5 people a second touching you. I mean, you're like Jay Leno on the opening of The Tonight Show. You know, slapping hands with 50 people. What do you mean, who? And the Messiah said, I felt virtue leave me. Virtue. I felt power, energy leave my body. I'm feeling a little weakened. And they looked around, and this lady said, well, it was me. I'm the one. I touched you. And he said, well, what'd you do that for? And she said, well, I'm sick, and I got an issue of blood, and I just figured that if I could get up close enough to you and touch the hem of your garment, I would be healed. And he said, go your way, you're healed. And the lady was healed from that moment on. Now, at the hem of his garment was this fringe, like Jerry Spence wears to the Supreme Court, like I wear when I go to church or on holy days or on those occasions when I go into court. See, court is a holy gathering. It's a gathering in front of a priest called a judge in the temple called the courthouse, and it's a proceeding which is carried on under the authority of the judges spoken of in Deuteronomy chapter 1. It is a public place where you should be wearing your fringe. Now, if I went to church, it would be conducted by a priest in a holy place called the temple. You call them churches. And in the officiating of his ministerial duties, we would be in an official gathering of the congregation. And it would be incumbent upon me at that location or that place to be wearing my fringe. I'm asked sometimes when we get to this fringe statute, well, how come you don't wear it 24/7? Well, for the same reason that I don't wear it when I take a shower. I usually take a shower stark, buck-ass naked, just in case some of you are out there wondering. I mean, I just don't have nothing on when I take a shower, and I don't have on my fringe. There's a second place where I probably wouldn't wear this fringe. If I was out swimming someplace, you know, like down at the lake, and maybe I had my swimming trunks on, I probably would not. Well, I can tell you very, very, very honestly, I don't wear it there. I've never been known to wear my fringe down at the lake. And I don't wear it when I go out in the field and I'm picking up rocks wearing my bib overalls either. So you don't wear a suit when you go out swimming, and you don't wear your swimming trunks when you go into court or go to church. So at different occasions, like when you go to a wedding, there was a story in the Bible, there was a story in the scripture where there was a wedding feast. And the story comes down, and the guy that's running the feast here, it's God the Creator, he comes over to this guy and says, hey, you, how come you don't have a wedding garment on? So, on the holy days, there's 7 annual holy days, it's incumbent upon all of us to wear this fringe on those holy days. It's incumbent upon us to wear these when we go to court, when we go to church. So on the Sabbaths, it would be a good thing to wear. Going to church and going to court. Well, anyway, now here's Tim Gammon. Now picture this. Here's the jury. They're all looking at me. Here's the judge. He's looking at me. Now this judge is a Mason. And the jurors, I could just about figure they're all Baptist Christians. And if they aren't, they're all Christians. Anyway, in this country, 95% of the people answer to the name Christian. And so I stood up and I opened my button on my coat and I opened it up and I exposed my fringe. And I turned to the judge so he could see it, and then I turned to the jury so they could see it. And then I turned back to Tim Gammon and I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I am wearing my fringe today. And yes, as a matter of fact, and as a matter of law, I am in compliance with that statute and that law today. Then I buttoned my coat and I sat down, waiting for my next question. Then he changed the subject, and Tim and I had a couple of encounters in various cases from that point forward, and you know, he never asked me another Bible question. That's right, Tim Gammon never asked me another Bible question. And that's because I suspect that he didn't want to know the answer. Now, there's a rule in law that we always follow, and that is you never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. Tim asked me a question. He did not know the answer, and I burned him. Burned him. Good. One of the better performances that I've put on in court. Once in a while, I put on a good performance. Not often, but once in a while. And that happened to be one of them. So I thought I would relate that to you so that the next time you go to court, you should be wearing that fringe. And it should be colored blue. Blue. Now, if you don't have blue, you should be wearing a fringe. Not everybody has blue available or in front of them, etc. But just point that out. It's blue and white, just strings hanging down. You could make one, you know. You don't have to be gaudy. You don't have to show everybody in the world, hey, look at me. Look what I'm wearing here. I'm holier than thou. You can wear it under your coat. But you should be wearing it. Somebody might ask you that question someday like they asked me. You should have an answer. You should be able to answer for the faith that's in you. Now, there's another story that comes down here I thought I'd relate to you, and that's the story here of peyote. Peyote. There was a guy one time came into my office, and he said, "Have you been watching this peyote trial up in Oregon?" And then I said, "Not other than what I've been reading in the paper. You know, you'll read these stories in the paper, and they'll usually follow something like that." Well, the bottom line was two Indians. They're working for some governmental agency. Now, I'm going to just guess, Department of Labor, you know, something like that. Up in Portland, Oregon, they're working for the government up there, and they go in to their offices, and they're smoking peyote. I'm not quite sure what peyote is, but it's probably something like marijuana, and I guess you smoke it. I don't know. Now, American Indians can do that. Well, just about. 26 states in the Union prohibit it, and 24 states permit it. I believe it isn't quite 25-25. It's 26-24, and I kind of forget which side the peyote guys are on, but, you know, it's right at 50-50. And Oregon is one of the states that I'm kind of foggy on this. I think it's one of the states that permit it. But it really doesn't make any difference to our story here as it comes out. This case goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. But here's what was kind of bizarre about this case. The state officials heard about these two guys. They're in their offices. I mean, they're at work. And they're smoking peyote. Oh, I'll tell you what it is. Oregon is a state that allows it. And that's why they're smoking it in their office, because they're entitled to smoke it because the law allows it and because they're Indians. And so here they are puffing away or doing whatever they do with their peyote. And their supervisor finds them and he sees what they're doing and fires them. Oh, I know what they were. They were drug counselors. That's right. They were drug counselors. They were supposed to be telling people. That's what made this thing so bizarre. Yeah, two Indians, they're drug counselors working in their offices, counseling you people not to take drugs. And their senior staff comes in, catches them, their boss, and fires them. Now, these two guys, they go down to the unemployment office, and they say, "Well, now we're unemployed, we've been canned." And the Department of Employment up there, or the Unemployment Division, says, "Well, we're not going to give you unemployment insurance. You've been fired, and you've been fired for cause. And because you've been fired and fired for cause, you're not entitled to unemployment insurance." Now, these two Indians are sitting there saying, "No, hang on a second. We're Indians, number one, and number two, it's legal for us to smoke peyote. Now, you whiteys out there can't do that. Don't you Catholics, Protestants, and Jews out there, or you marijuana growers think that you can smoke marijuana now, or that you can smoke peyote or anything else? You can't do that." But these Indians can. They're in one of the states that says, "Hey, we can." Furthermore, in those 26 states, there are 24 states that say you can't. That's a constitutional confrontation waiting to happen for some of you Indians out there. I mean, you know, let's suppose that you're in pick a state, you know, like maybe Missouri. I don't know if we can smoke it here or not. But you know, say you're an Indian in Missouri and you light up, you know, and some cop says, "Hey, wait a minute, you druggie," and so they arrest you. I don't think that they can do that. I think you Indians out there can smoke it anywhere you want. I don't think you have to be on the reservation. Now, they might burn you if you were to smoke it in a no-smoking area. See? And they might get you there because that's reasonable regulation. But, you know, wherever people can normally smoke tobacco or cigars or something else, you go smoke your peyote. And I think you'd have a fair constitutional confrontation coming down the pike there. So anyway, these two guys, they're denied their unemployment insurance, and so they sue the state or their agencies. Now, I forgot who the defendants were. You can't sue the state of Oregon under ordinary circumstances. There are some exceptions to that rule, but as a general rule, the 11th Amendment's a collateral estoppel to sue in the state, and that's because they have sovereign immunity. But you can sue the Department of Drug Rehabilitation. You can sue the officers and the governor and anybody else that might have been involved. So anyway, they brought the suit. Now, the suit qualified, and the case went to trial. The case winded its way. It eventually ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court. And this is why my student comes into the office, and he says, "Well, how do you think this is going to come out?" And I said, "You know, I got to confess, I haven't got a clue. These guys can smoke peyote, and I don't think that the government can tell them where or when or how they can smoke it." That was my opinion. I was wrong, dead wrong on that point. But I was like a lot of people, and I was just dumb. I didn't know what the issue was. See, I thought that the issue was smoking peyote, and that wasn't it at all. The issue was actually decided on whether or not they were entitled to unemployment insurance. So this case comes down as a landmark case, and people think that this is a peyote smoking case. It doesn't have anything to do with peyote. Can you believe that? I'm not pulling your leg here. The case went up there. See, these guys sued not can they or can they not smoke peyote. The state never charged them with any crime smoking the peyote. These guys sued. They were the plaintiffs. They sued. They're the plaintiffs. And they said, "You can't deny us unemployment insurance because we're smoking peyote and fire us." And the Supreme Court came back and said, "Oh, yeah, they can deny you unemployment insurance because you're smoking peyote." And that's because while you can smoke this peyote in your bedroom, you can stuff it under your eyelids, stuff it in jowls and cheeks of your mouth, you could stick it up your rectum, I guess, if you wanted to, but you can't smoke it on the job because that's prohibited conduct. Now, that's important, and I want to tell you why. You see, when you're employed, you got a guardian-ward relationship in which your employer is your guardian, and you're the ward. You're known as an employee. Now, in olden days, we called this a master-servant relationship. We called this the plantation owner and the slave. Just wanted to let you know, in case you were wondering. What we've done here is we've changed the plantation owner to employer. And we've changed that word slave to employee. Now, we Americans are good at that, and we do it all the time. And I just showed you that in our religious activities, we change these words. Like, we've got the Son of God, S-O-N, and now we're worshiping the Son, God, S-U-N, God. You know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Like this luck, God, G-A-D, G-U-D, G-O-D, Jesus and Christ and so on. And that's all we're really doing here is changing these names and words. Now, when we get into the real world and we start doing cases, which is what happened here with this peyote case, the peyote case in reality then is simply a case decided based upon a master-servant relationship, and the master said, "Don't smoke here," and you smoked here, so we fired you. Now, when we fire you, can you come in here and then say, "Well, I'm going to apply my religious free exercise to this?" And the answer is no, because we're not arguing about can you smoke peyote. The answer is yes, you can, but just not here. See, government can regulate that which it subsidizes, and when you're working for somebody, you're being paid, so you're being subsidized. Government is subsidizing your employment, and they can set down rules, and it comes under Wickard versus Filburn, and Hale versus Hinkle. And that's because once you joined employment, you joined a corporate capacity, and therefore you are there for the benefit of the public. Now, we can regulate you. We can't prohibit you, but we can regulate you. We can't prohibit you from smoking peyote, but we can regulate you as to where you can smoke it. And you can't smoke it here. There might be some other places that you can't smoke it, but one of them is here. That's in the office on your job as a drug counselor. I thought you'd think that was just real special. Well, let me give you a reminder here. We're at the halfway point, and you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now be sure to order that free CD package by calling us direct and asking for it. It's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto our archives page and you can download it right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind here that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. And these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. I guess I should give you the name and address here again of these two books that we've been citing here quite often. I'm not citing them today. But Come Out of Her, My People by C.J. Coster and Fossilized Customs by Lou White. And I believe that both of these books should be available from that underground bookstore, which is called Brave New Bookstore. And you should keep this one down on your shopping list here. It's bravenewbookstore.com. And their telephone number is 512-480-2503. Again, that's 512-480-2503. Now, those are pretty good folks down there. I think you're going to like them. A couple of good old boys run that store. And they don't make a ton of money off of that. I think one of them's retired and the other one makes his living off of it. And I don't think he's getting fat, and I didn't see him driving a Beamer or a Lamborghini. So I think you can do business with those boys. That number again is 512-480-2503. And if you're in Austin, Texas, and want to go down near to the bookstore, it's 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas, 78705. 1904 Guadalupe Street, Suite B, Austin, Texas, 78705. And any of these books that you can't find anywhere else, you call those boys and I think they'll find it. I think they'll get you one. Fossilized Customs, Lou White. Says 6th edition on here. I guess he's been writing this for quite some time. The Pagan Sources of Popular Customs. Popular Customs. And then Come Out of Her, My People by C.J. Coster. Pretty good sources of information for adults that want to do a little Bible study. And I like it because they reveal a lot of neat stories that, you know, you'd never hear this in church. I mean, hell will freeze over before you ever go to church and some preacher stands up there and says, hey, let me tell you where Christmas comes from. Let me tell you where Easter comes from, or this locked in God, Jesus, and so on. Those guys are the purveyors of the status quo. Hey, I gotta pull out another book here. Be patient with me. I'm old and slow. I got about a half an hour to go here, and I used up all my material. Now I gotta dig out some more. But I'll tell you what, it just crossed my mind. There's a neat story back here. And you can get this book from the U.S. Government Printing Office, I believe. It's called The Free Exercise of Religion. About 165 pages. Let me flip back here and see. Yep, 164. 164 pages called The Free Exercise of Religion. This is the Bible for First Amendment cases for all U.S. prosecutors. That's right, prosecuting attorneys. And these prosecuting attorneys, they need to have a source of information that they can go to so that they can prosecute you when there's a First Amendment case. Now, there's 334 free exercise cases that are in the literature, state and federal, that are decided between 1794, I believe it is, 1794 and 1988, when, or 1986, August 13th, 1986, when this report was written. There might be a new update to this. You know, I might be behind 86, 96, 106. You know, this thing's 24 years old. Goes to show you what happens when time flies when you're having fun. Anyway, this is called The Report to the Attorney General. Now, that isn't the important thing in this book, is that it's up to date. All that's going to do is bring up the religious free exercise cases decided in the last 25 years. Well, the rules in deciding those cases haven't changed. They're still decided, you know, under Ashwander versus TVA, which was decided back in 1936. If you got a newer version, it would include this Peyote case. That's another landmark case. And it would include the Texas Catholic Church. It's Austin Diocese, you know, in that church deal that they had down there. There'd be some updated cases. But what this deals with are the 17 triggers and tests, or the standards that are used by the courts to decide these free exercise cases. So I'm just going to run through them quickly, and I'll do it slowly here so that in case you want to take them off of this CD off the internet or something like that, you can slow it down. You can take them. The first is called the least restrictive means test, and the second is called the compelling state interest test. Three is called the balancing test. Four, the belief action tectonomy test. The fifth is called the neutrality theory. Six, strict separation analysis. Seven, free exercise clause. Eight is the establishment clause. then 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 are the Seeger test, which is the Seeger test, which is a belief in a supreme being truly and sincerely held, individual belief and religious training in belief, and a duty to God. That's belief in God or a supreme being, that's number 9. Truly and sincerely held, number 10. Individual belief, number 11. Religious training in belief, number 12. Duty to God, number 13. Then number 14 is called the reasonableness standard test. Number 15 is the strict scrutiny test. And number 16, the rational basis test. And number 17, the religiously motivated action test. 17 triggers and tests that you have to combine with the Ashwander doctrine, coupled with the Seeger versus U.S. case, so you can get the 5 winning and 5 losing religious re-exercise indice down. Now, all of that is contained in this report to the Attorney General. Report to the Attorney General. All right, now I'm going to show you that this is pretty dynamite piece of material. If you can't get this from the U.S. government printing office, and you might try bravenewbookstore.com. Tell them what you want, and if they can't get it as a last resort, where you can't get it anywhere else, then call me, and I can get it for you. But I don't want to. And so, listen to this. The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution provides, in part, that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. There are perhaps few topics in modern American constitutional thought that have occasioned as much discussion as the subject of church and state. Indeed, the interface between government and religion remains to a large degree as controversial today as it was in the era when Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, George Mason, Patrick Henry, and others debated the separation of the secular from the sectarian. If time has not resolved the early debates, the expansion of the role of government in the past few decades has only heightened the need for continued discussion. This expansion of governmental influence over community, commercial, educational, and family affairs raises anew questions regarding the influence of religion in government and the role of government in religion. These are difficult and perhaps intractable questions, but it is incumbent upon members of both the legal and religious communities to work through the constitutional algorithms with diligence, tolerance, and goodwill. This study, Religious Liberty Under the Free Exercise Clause, makes a valuable contribution to our understanding of the Free Exercise Clause, prepared by the Office of Legal Policy within the Department of Justice. This study is one of a series of analyses of contemporary legal issues undertaken by the Office of Legal, what was that again? Legal something policy. Office of Legal Policy. Hang on here, let me underline that. The Office of Legal Policy. In case that ever comes up again. I anticipate that this study will spark new thought on a topic of considerable importance to the nation, a topic about which there are several reasonable points of view, and it should be of interest to anyone concerned about religious liberty. All right, now I gave you the 17 triggers and tests in case you want to unravel those. And let me tell you a little bit more about this thing of religious free exercise from the point of view of the Attorney General and the the Solicitor General and the U.S. attorneys that are going to be prosecuting you. The First Amendment to the United States Constitution provides in part that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. There are few constitutional provisions about which more has been written and less understood than the religious clauses of the First Amendment. It is indeed ironic that the framers of the Constitution, who sought to preserve religious liberty and to free a people from their history of sectarian disputes, should by their very attempt to maintain religious peace have fostered an equally turbulent dispute over the meaning of their words. The proper line between church and state remains, as Professor Kirtland put it, an issue destined to generate heat rather than light. So said P. Kirkland in Religion and the Law back in 1962. It is widely agreed that the decision of the Supreme Court in the area of church and state and freedom of religion evidence such a lack of a unifying theory as to be irreconcilable. Critics frequently claim that the court's decisions are inconsistent with the language of the First Amendment, its history, and most obviously with prior decisions of the court itself. For example, Professor Kirkland has explained that the Constitution has become the excuse for the court's decisions, but not a reason for them. Kirkland, the irreverence of the Constitution, the religion clauses of the First Amendment and the Supreme Court, published in the Law Review, 1978, and more than 20 years ago, Mark DeWolf Howe complained of the apparent political compromises reflected in the court's decisions and charged that the court has too often pretended that the dictates of the nation's history, rather than the mandates of its own will, compelled a particular decision by superficial and purposive interpretations of the past, and the court has dishonored the arts of the historian and degraded the talents of the lawyer. M. Howe, The Garden and the Wilderness. I want to pause here for a moment and bring back to your attention. Do you remember the case that we discussed here a little earlier called Reynolds versus U.S., the polygamy case back in 1878? Let me remind all of you pulpit parrots out there that you all have 501c3 tax exemption. Now let me bring to your attention Wickard versus Filburn. Wickard versus Filburn. I forgot the exact site on it, but it's about 1942, where it's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. 501c3 is a subsidy, boys and girls. Then let me bring to your attention Hale versus Henkel. It is true that the individual has rights, but corporations don't, and all of you people are incorporated. All right. Have you got that down? Now, what that translates into is that all of you 501c3 churches do not have First Amendment free exercise rights. Put that out of your minds. Your government has induced you to incorporate so that they can circumvent your First Amendment rights. Now, I have First Amendment rights, but I'm not incorporated, and I don't take any benefits from government, and I can comply with Hale versus Henkel. You can't. So when I hear people, and they're very often, there's many of them, and often call the law school, and then they cry. They don't preach me a sermon. They cry, and they tell me about how the government is pressing upon them and taking their religious rights away, and, you know, the government's just doing all these bad things. All right. That's a fiction. The government is not doing any bad things to you. They already have done past tense the bad thing. They deceived you. They cunningly coerced you into waiving your rights due to your ignorance. Now that's true. Government did do that. But after they did that, and they got you to sign up for 501c3, nobody's violating your rights, son. You don't have any rights to violate. Once you join the Army, you don't need to worry about the MPs or the sergeants or anybody violating your rights. You haven't got any rights to violate. Now, that being the case, I thought I'd point that out to you. So that that'll save you some telephone calls and save me some explaining to do. Now, there are a number of cases in here that have been decided, and even people that belong to 501c3 churches have some civil rights that Congress has mandated for you. You do have civil rights. You don't have any inalienable rights. You don't have any God-given rights. If that was the right word to use, you don't have any creator, God, or Elohim, God, or Yahshua gods, or, you know, whatever your God is, hang a label on him. You don't have any of those rights. You do have some civil rights, but those are spelled out here in the document. Now, I think that religious free exercise is the greatest thing since sliced white bread. And I think that God himself, the Creator God, in this case, has inspired those. And our First Amendment rights are still in full force and effect. What most people are calling rights are really privileges and immunities granted by Congress that can be regulated. And then they're complaining, getting those confused with their inalienable rights, God-given rights. And then this confusion comes up because you went to public school and you can't read, can't write, can't think, can't spell, can't. You've been dumbed down to such a degree. Now, I had this problem until I was about 37. And then somebody pointed that out to me. And then once they said, hey, Gordon, did you know you've been practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto? And I was offended. And I was put off, and I was bummed out. And then I looked at it and said, oh, my God, that's exactly what I'm doing. And then once I found out what I was doing, I said, well, maybe I could change that. So, you know, I quit sending my kids to public school, took my money out of the banks. I don't do business with the banks and the central banks, and I don't pay the income tax, Social Security, don't participate in insurance, and I do all these crazy things. I kill little lammies and take their blood and sprinkle it on doorposts and lintels, you know. Crazy stuff like that. Now, I've got some inalienable rights back. I'm not in the 501c3 category anymore. I'm not in corporate capacity. I'm not taking any privileges under Wickard versus Filburn. I've got rights under Hale versus Henkel, and I'm not complaining. I'm one of the few people in America that says, hey, this deal works pretty good. I'm not. So if you're a government official and you say, this guy Gordon's got to be killed and neutralized and silenced, sit back and relax there, Bob. You don't need to do that. You don't need to kill me. I'm not trying to overturn the IRS or outlaw the Federal Reserve, do away with the income tax. I'm just out here doing my thing, telling the people out here that they've got a choice now. Got a choice. After all, that's what God told us in Deuteronomy 30. He says, I'm going to set before you people life and death and good and evil. He went a step further and he said, choose life. But, you know, you've got that choice to make. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, we had a choice to make. And the people said, we want a king like all the nations around us. God stepped forward and he said, hey, wake up. That's a bad choice, wrong decision. Don't do that. And we said, nevertheless, we'll have a king. We not only didn't take the advice, we gave him the finger and said, nevertheless, we'll have a king. So the Creator now, he's a pretty broad-minded guy. He said, well, okay, let's let these people go sleep in this bed for a while and see how they like it. And he gave us a little caveat there. He said, and this king that you shall set over you, he's going to oppress you, and when he does, you're going to cry out to me. That's what people always do, you know, when they're in trouble. When they're having problems, they all get religious and they start praying a lot. And he said, you're going to cry out to me in that day, and I will not hear you. So all you people out there that are praying to Jesus now about President Obama and the Congress and about all these government bureaucrats that are causing you all this grief, he said, I'm not going to listen to this crap. So I tell my students when they come in here, you can save your prayers. He already told you, you ain't listening. You ever have a daddy do that? You know? No, I'm not listening to that. So we're going to have to pay the piper, bottom line. Now, if you want to avoid paying the piper, then we got to change our program. Now, the biggest club that we Americans have, and you Canadians up there, this is your biggest club too. Your law up there is a little different than ours, but all Anglo-Saxon administration worldwide works essentially the same way. You're going to have a little difference in your words, a little difference in your time, you know, for filing motions, briefs, affidavits, appellate review. You know, there's little subtle rule changes that you have to take into consideration. But when it comes to religious free exercise, a basic and fundamental right guaranteed by inalienable rights under our contract with God drawn up at Mount Sinai, they're all the same. Denmark works the same way. Sweden, Finland, Norway, Iceland, you name it, wherever we Anglo-Saxons congregate, the law works the same way. Now, it's the best and it's the most effective club that we have. Now, government says that they want you to register to vote. Okay, you can do that. But once you register to vote, you become a political animal, and there's no room in religious free exercise for politics. So I wanted to tell you up front, you're whistling Dixie through a straw hat if you think you're going to vote this through. It hasn't happened in 3,300 years, and it isn't likely to happen next week, next month, or ever. Now, that's the history of it. But under free exercise, which I'm going to bring up next time, and we'll get into it a little hotter and heavier, I'm going to show you here that this religious free exercise is the biggest, bestest club that you and I have in the world of politics, in the world of everyday garden variety living that God has been able to give us. That is, the Creator God, you know. And it's available to everybody that wants to use it. So I wanted to show you that. It doesn't have anything to do with religion. You don't have to go to church. You don't have to give your heart to Jesus. You don't have to give any money to the organization. This has to do with what we're going to tell the judge when he hauls us in. Says, hey, listen, we're not satisfied with your behavior. And then besides that, this isn't going to fly in any churches out there to start with because, you know, these are pig-eating Christians over here, and we're going to quit eating pig. And they don't like you anyway. So this is just between us and our government and our courts and our judges. We're going to leave the preacher and the church out of it. Religious free exercise. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.